This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
We are now beginning the third and final day here aboard the Queen Mary, and actually I just finished a ghost tour of the ship that was led by I hear one in the background there now. It has been a spooky morning here already, and it's going to get even spookier because I'm here with my friend and yours, Mr. Brad Henderson. Hey there. Hi, Brad.
Hey, this is Brad Henderson. I'm going to talk as I snap a photo of someone else. No, we can multitask. How's it going, Scott?
Fantastic.
All right,
smiling. It's been a really good... Really good. Perfect timing over here, by the way. So we are, again, on the final day of the convention, and it's been just a lot of fun. Have you been enjoying it so far? What's been your favorite talk or thing that you've seen?
Do I have a favorite talk or thing that I've seen?
That you've seen here this or yeah.
You know, well...
I mean, there's still more to do here today. I mean, we've got some great talks, and tonight's going to be the Long Island Mist, Long Island Iced Tea.
And the reason you said that is you've had three of them already today. Right.
Well, it's only 10 o'clock.
That's right.
So that handsome only had the three.
Yeah,
So you have come several years to this in the past.
Yes.
You are a collector yourself.
I am.
And for a while, you were the curator for Richard Garriott's collection and
that
everything.
That is correct.
Now, who maintains that now? Has he got all that in storage? Or is
Most of it is at his house in New York now, and he's not doing tours and things like he used to, so he doesn't need a curator or tour guide.
Yeah.
His interests lately have been as president of the Explorers Club, so his collecting interests have slowed down.
Oh, okay.
Well, from the point of view of magic. But he's always been like that. He gets into these...
Hot and cold.
Yeah, well, with various topics and articles. The last thing he was really collecting was he was trying to collect the entire history of the universe. From the oldest known bacteria that we have to meteorite samples that, you know, date back, you know, however many trillions of years through everything from every geological era to today. So not necessarily huge items from each, but some representation of each major period from the birth of time until now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So... Just kind of a small little collection he's working on.
It's in a cabinet.
Yeah, it's that's right.
It's a pretty big cabinet.
Somewhere at the end of the universe. That's true. In the what's the name of the cafe? The cafe at the end of the
Douglas Adams.
Yeah, Douglas Adams at the end of the universe. So as far
doesn't
as
matter what you order, it all comes out to $42.
That's the ultimate answer, isn't it?
That's right.
42. So you have seen, have you been buying anything or acquiring things aside from puzzles that I know that you love? And you
in life or here?
In life, not necessarily just here.
I mean, so I was very lucky. I have a good friend named Just Allen. Just Allen is an amazing magician, a real magician.
Is he in Australia, or am I thinking of somebody different?
No, he's used to be in the Woodstock, New York area. He ran Just Allen's, and he had a place out on Route 28. And he sold overpriced things that no one needed, and that was his own description of it. But I learned many valuable lessons about life and magic from Allen, maybe more so than almost any other person.
Sure.
Well, one of the things he said is he said, I never tried to sell anyone anything. He said, I tried to create an experience from which they would want to retain a memory. So when people went to his shop, they would buy something, not because they needed it, because they didn't need anything in his shop. He sold estate jewelry and dirty postcards and magnets and antiques. And it was just had a magic counter. But he felt that if people had such a wonderful experience, they'd want to take home a memory.
Sure.
So they'd buy something. And what they would buy would be dependent on their price point. So some people would buy a $5 dirty magnet for your refrigerator, and some people might buy a $50,000 piece of antique estate jewelry. But if you think about it, with magic, you know, if you're ever in the opportunity, I work a lot of venues in the summer, and I have a huge fan base. And I get all these people come up to me, and they all ask the same questions over and over, and they say the same things over and over. And, you know, when you're on the road for a month and a half and you hear the same question over and over, the same, it's very easy to want to start to get jaded. But what you have to remember is for that person, what they want more than anything is a memory with you. Mm-hmm. And this is their chance for it. So they don't know what to say. It's okay. They don't need to know. They just want, it's like the greatest compliment in the world. They want to take home a memory. You've become so important to them. They want their private moment with you.
And they, by having something tangible, that is a memory of that moment.
Well, you could do that. I mean, that's a good excuse to sell T-shirts. But really, it's more about understanding what that dynamic is when someone comes up to you after a show and wants to ask you questions or ask you how you get started. And, you know, we as magicians, I see people write these things. They ask you this question, oh, I've got my standard stock lines or whatever. And I understand why they do that, but I think that's really kind of rude. Not because of how we feel about it, but by understanding what's motivating this desire for someone to come up to you after a show and talk to you. They had such a great time that they want something more than the show. They want a little extra special moment with you. And I think that that's rather profound. One of the other things he taught me was how obstacles we can build in our paths. We would sit on the steps of Woodstock having ice cream, and we'd look at buildings, and he would say, because of that gate, they're going to lose 10% of the people, because 10% won't walk through that gate to get to the steps. Now, there's three steps. 20 more percent aren't going to go up those steps.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
So he
even if they open the gate.
Yeah, it's just they see barriers.
They see barriers.
So trying to realizing what are we accidentally putting in the way. So when I design events where I want participation for people, or I want people to move through spaces, that's exactly the sort of things that I consider, understanding how people are always looking for the path of least resistance. But Alan came to do an event for me, and as a present to me, he redecorated my entire collection, wow, redisplayed it all. And now all of these things, you know, which I tried to display in interesting ways, you can now see everything. And his lesson was, you know, not everything can be in the middle of the store, right? Not everything can be under the spotlight. There, you know, you only have a few choices there. And the importance, and what's great, though, is now my house is so well displayed that I see so many things, and I just go, do I want to make room for it? So
it has to be really important for you to
add
something.
Right, because now I've got a beautiful collection. I need more A-plus level pieces. I've got several A-plus level pieces, but last night I helped a friend buy an item, which I should have bought, but he kind of was, I knew he wanted it, and I helped facilitate, I think, that deal. But I'll regret that moment for the rest of my life, too. You know,
because you wanted that yourself, but
yeah. But you know, I think that's the hardest thing about being a collector. It's really very much a disease. You get an auction catalog, and to me, every auction catalog is merely an opportunity for disappointment, because either it's something I want, which I probably won't be able to afford, or it's everything I already have, and there's nothing in it that I want.
Yeah.
So, you know, I used to tell people the difference between being a collector and a hoarder is one of price point.
I see the difference. Sure.
Right.
Yep.
And it is tough to come to a place like this and not want everything.
Yeah.
But not all of us are in a position where we can afford everything, nor should we.
When you were talking about having special moments, a piece of somebody's life or something, reminds me of a comedian. I can't remember his name. Aziz.
Aziz Ansari?
Yeah, Aziz Ansari. And he said when he's like in New York or wherever he's walking the streets and somebody recognizes him and said, can we get a selfie? And he said, no, but I'll give you some time. Let's just take some time and talk. He said, that'll be a memory you'll appreciate and remember longer than this picture. And it's like, that's what a great idea.
Yeah, and it's a shame because selfies and the Instagram social media click-like economy has had, I think, the effect of reducing human interaction to moments of potential social media clout.
Yeah.
So a lot of the, it's like when the autograph hounds would, you know, go up to people and they didn't want the autograph. They were doing it to resell them.
Right.
Right.
Well, that's why Ricky J always would sign your name to Brad from Ricky, because if he just said Ricky J, he knew they'd be on eBay that night.
Yeah. And it's when we see celebrities or artists or human beings that we want to condemn or vilify because they put up walls, it's hard, I think, for us to admit that we are the reason that those walls exist.
Yeah, that's a good point. Interesting observation.
Yeah. If we weren't souls, then they wouldn't need to, you know, but right, you know, when we turn interactions with these people into moments for our own self-aggrandizement. Look at me, I'm with so-and-so.
Right.
Right? Where really, if anything, I've never been a big, the one exception of that, though, I've never posted it. And I told him when I did this, I said, I hate asking you this, although he does it all the time. But I asked Chris Hart to do the thing
hand on your head,
on my head. But that's because Adam's Family was such a huge influence on me when I was a kid. So to have that photo, in fact, I don't think I ever posted it, but I think I was looking at that last night, actually, and I was like, oh, that's a cool little moment that I had with him.
Well, speaking of cool moments, they're about to start another cool moment here with our 11 o'clock thing. Looks like they got a panel discussion or set up. Looks like Lance Rich is coming up to the podium.
Well, I think they're doing the Mystics now.
Oh, maybe they're talking to the Mystics. Okay. But I thought they're going to be doing a show tonight, so I think you're right. They're talking.
The show's tonight,
yeah.
But the panels that I think Randy Pitchford is supposed to be on this afternoon.
I haven't seen Randy here, but I guess maybe there's a lot of people I haven't seen. Even though it's a small convention, I'm still running into people that's like, have you been here the whole time? So,
well, you know, I think having it here is an interesting choice.
Great venue.
In Akron, or was it Akron? Where were we? Cleveland.
Cleveland last year.
You know, here, because there are so many magicians in such a hour and a half, 2 hour radius, I think we're seeing a lot of people that are showing up.
Good point. In the LA area.
Whereas opposed to the more, not, I don't mean to denigrate anybody that's here saying they're not serious collectors or whatever, but you know, it's easier to come out on a lark. This is a much bigger conference. Of course, Vegas, in Vegas, I think that was the biggest one they had.
That's where they're coming next year too, because they know their numbers, know their audience.
Yeah. But it's nice to go to places where, you know, getting to see Bruce's collection was, of course, possible.
Yeah.
And getting to tour the HRC. Now, I am you now as well. That's just in our backyard. And Eric Colleary, who's the director of the theater department, is the nicest human being on the planet. Last year, I did a show for a philosophy class. And afterwards, I just popped in and I called him up. And I was like, I hate to be this guy, but I'm in the lobby. You want to have coffee or something? We probably spent 3.5 hours pulling stuff out.
That shows you what a great guy stuff. He is.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. What an amazing resource.
He loves people who have a sincere interest
and we should tell people, if you want to see it, you need to do it now. And the reason is that whole collection, everything in that building, all those millions of artifacts are going to go to storage. They're having to redo the entire HVAC system. They can't repair it anymore. It's so old.
Sure.
You can't get parts for it.
So they got to store everything while they go and revise.
Everything has to be shipped out. The whole place is going to be redone.
That's going to be at least a year. 3 years, maybe.
So how many bureaucratic / government projects have you known, Scott, that, and I'm a pro-government guy, and I can say that's going to end on time.
Good morning.
Speaking of ending on time.
Yes, let's end now. This is Over the Magic Word Podcast. That was Brad Henderson.
Let everybody Scotty get their seats in.
Well, as I mentioned, that we are on the last day, the third day of the convention, and as we finish this, then one of the people that I told you earlier is always busy, and I really can't talk until towards the end of the convention, and now is that time, the organizer, Mr. Bill Smith. Hey there, Bill. How you doing?
Scott, welcome to the Queen Mary.
Why, thank you, Captain or Commander. This is great being here. How did you choose this place? I mean,
well, I was born in Long Beach in 1955. In 1967, the Queen Mary came to its new home, Long Beach. And I was 12 years old, and my sister brought me down, and we watched it come in. A couple years later, they allowed locals to go on. And I've always been a Queen Mary buff, and I really loved it. And the IBM convention was on here, I think, 1985. I had a dealer booth, and it was great. So I always wanted to be on the Queen Mary. Mike Caveney, basically, they were thinking about having the history conference here. But the problem
the
is—
The Los Angeles history thing?
To move it down here. Yeah. And the problem
more
is—
more room.
The problem is that room is a challenge because there's columns. There's columns all over. So you saw how we sat it, you know, there were between the columns, and there was maybe like 15 feet between the columns, mm-hmm. and it was a little fight. But it's such a beautiful, historic place. I'm staying because I'm spending about $75,000 here mm-hmm. for your guys' rooms and all. I'm giving that kind of revenue to the Queen Mary. So I get certain comp rooms, and I also got a suite, right? Now,
right.
at a Marriott or whatever, it's like, you know, a little suite. I have the Queen Elizabeth suite. Did I show it to you?
No, I would like to
show it to
you. Can I see this later?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And so it's amazing. You walk in and it's huge. It's like 900 square feet.
Holy cow.
There's a maid's quarters. And,
what, in
and
the room?
Yeah.
A maid's quarters?
Yeah, because these rich people would bring their maids.
It was the Queen's, literally the Queen's room.
Yeah. And so I know a lot of celebrities probably lived in there. Mm. And so I wanted the Winston Churchill's suite because we know for sure that Churchill was on here for three.
Is that a pretty big
times.
Suite also?
It's the same, but it didn't have the maid's room because he didn't have
still
a maid.
Still smell like cigars?
Yeah. But it was, so Mike Caveney and Stan always room together because I'm buying their rooms for them. And I said to Stan, I said, if you don't mind the maid's quarters, which it's pretty great. And he goes, yeah. So Stan's been in my maid's quarters. So, and then last night, Randy and Christy Pitchford arrived, and then they're in the King George suite across the way.
Okay.
And it's identical. Wow. So it's really great. This place is, it went a lot of disrepair, but, and that's why I wanted to have it here mm-hmm. Before the pandemic, but during the pandemic, I drove by here and it's just like a ghost town. And so I was like, well, that's the Queen Mary's out. When we decided we couldn't go to Vegas this year, I was looking at Marriott's and other things around, very expensive. And I said, well, it's a drag that the Queen Mary's closed. I said it to Les Arnold. He said, no, they just opened. A friend of mine did the big band on New Year's Eve.
And they're probably looking for making deals.
They were definitely. And so I came down here and it was like, wow, this is going to be perfect. Because mm-hmm. our sessions are in the Grand Salon, which was the first class dining room. And the first class dining room annex is the Windsor room. And that was our dealer room. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday up on the promenade deck, they have a thing called the board room where Mike Caveney brought his Egyptian hall, amazing posters, one-of-a-kind posters we had up. Friends of ours, Bill and Bob Self, who passed away sadly, ended up with Thurston Illusions, and we brought those. We had those on display. We had all the versions of the Rogers statues.
Yeah, so. the Traveling Magician. And then also the Jim Coleman videos we were watching, films.
Yeah, Jim Connolly.
Connolly.
Yeah, that was great. So it was just, it's a really great place because it's so classy, and it's, I don't think of the better place to have a history.
For this type of a convention, you're absolutely right, Bill, because when we had the 1986 convention with the IBM here, I was at that convention, and we were bused over across to Long Beach where we went to the
Terrace Theater.
Correct. Yeah. And because we're not having big illusion shows or anything, this is ideal for what we're doing.
I was there, and I was here but I was only here for a couple of days because I was off to go into Hong Kong with Blackstone.
Oh.
So I missed the show that Doug Henning was on.
I missed that show
because
I was booked to work at the Magic Castle starting on that Monday night, and he was on Monday night.
Yeah. So I don't even remember where the dealer room was. I think it was down in one of the old cargo holds or something. Mm-hmm. But it's a great place. Everybody has had a good time. And
we have.
I book acts, and this was Southern California related. And it was like a heavy Southern California, but that's what I wanted to do. Every time I go to a certain city, mm-hmm. like we were in Cleveland last year, and we had
Austin, same thing.
Houdini in Cleveland, and Bruce Averbuch, and Tim LaGanke's collection, and then Austin, the Ransom Center, and
Trixie gave a great talk then also.
Oh, I know. And that's what, and I said to her, I said, okay, Trixie, I don't know if you're up for it, but in Magic of Texas.
Yeah.
And she goes, she didn't want to do it at first. Let me think. I go, you knew all of these guys.
Yeah.
You know, and the best, Ray Anderson, we went to Esther's Follies.
That was awesome.
So it's been a good run. And next year we are going back to Vegas. Not the way I work this, my loyal customers get first dibs. So I'm going to probably open up registration in September, November, and it'll go out just to people that were here.
Us, yeah.
Yeah. And then we will, I'm only limited to about 180 people because the David Copperfield tour last time, it worked so perfectly.
It was.
We got to do the same format. And
you only let in so many people, I'm sure.
Yeah, what I do is there's 180 is really, that's because we have groups of 15 and the busing, like I said, it's all worked out. So, and what I do is I have about 25 to 30 of my friends who work as docents in David's. And they just stand and if you're up for it, you can be one of them. And you just basically, you hang out in the museum the whole day.
I'll do that.
And that way I can get more, you know, it's fun. You can roam around and you can, so it's really great. But so tonight, right now we have our next session is going to be Randy Pitchford is performing some Aikido pieces and we've got-
I would have guessed Cardini pieces. We're going to do some Aikido pieces.
Okay. And we've got John Cox talking about Houdini on the High Seas and Gabe Fahuri on the David Bamberg Illusion Show book. And then we close with Gabe doing an auction.
Live auction.
12 quick pieces and no minimum. And it's going to be great. So, okay.
Yeah, this is going to be great. Thank you very much for your time. And thanks for putting this whole thing together. It's been a lot of fun. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was the organizer. And next year is going to be in Las Vegas. So be sure to stay tuned for that. This year we didn't have it in Las Vegas because, we had to delay that because David Copperfield was still working.
We were working. Waiting for some new things to be
coming in. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Bill Smith. Scotty out. So the presentation we had this afternoon was with the Long Beach Mystics that Lance Rich, who is not a member of the Long Beach Mystics, actually was the moderator for this. And he had several people who were on there. But what was kind of cool is not only all the stories and the videos and things they showed up on the screen, but also how there were so many people in the audience who were just in attendance because we are in Long Beach where the Mystics were here. And there were more people in the audience who were Mystics than there were actually people on stage. And I got one of them now with me, Ed Alonso. Hey there, Ed.
Hello. It's always so fun to be on your show. Yes, I was a Long Beach Mystic, and boy, that was the third thing in magic that changed my life. When I started to become members of magic clubs, the first one that I joined was the SAM Ring 21, it was 22, which was below the bank at the Home Savings Building. And it had a whole theater.
Is that in L.A. or is that in Long Beach?
Here in L.A., in Los Angeles. And so that was the first club that I had joined.
And you were how old then?
Oh, I was probably 15 at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was probably 15. So I found out about that club because I had been auditioning to be a junior member at the Magic Castle when I was 14. The first time I auditioned, I didn't make the audition. But I saw what the other auditioners were doing, and I thought, okay, I need to move into something a little different if I'm going to be part of this club. So first I was a member of the post, the 1313E post, decorating mannequins of Thurston and Keller with their original equipment down in the basement.
Wow.
And hearing about the Magic Castle and how I needed to become a junior member there, that changed my whole life. And then one of the junior members was Mark Kalin. He said, you know, there's another magic club in Long Beach called the Long Beach Mystics. You would be perfect for that. So, of course, I attended my first meeting after that, signed up, became a member, got the original Stan Allen newsletter every month, which was prequel to the Magic Magazine. I think it was called Inside Magic.
Inside Magic, because he used to be, he was a demonstrator at a magic shop.
That's right.
And he was kind of-
At the Los Alamitos Magic Shop.
Oh, is that where it was? Okay.
That's the one.
And he put that newsletter together.
Yeah, and that's where we'd have our club meetings for the Long Beach Mystics. And then, you know, today when we saw them speak about the Long Beach Mystics, they were all, you know, the presidents of the club or the secretary, all the officials, you know, back then. And I was just a member. And Dana Daniels was, I think, maybe the last president in there. And he asked me to be part of a couple of the
It's
amazing.
No longer exists.
It didn't really exist anymore. Once the magic shop closed down, the Los Alamos magic shop, then it was kind of like, well, it's everyone's kind of breaking away. We don't really have a place to meet. And it was, you know, it was that kind of thing. So, but the camaraderie of the Long Beach Mystics, as you saw during that hour presentation, we're still hanging out together. We still admire each other and learn. Oh, yes. And I learned so much from those guys. And I still do. I still look up to them. And I think they still look down at me.
There was such mutual respect on there that they talked about. And there were a lot of names that I had not heard about, but they were speaking just as lovingly and admiringly about someone who, to me, I didn't know as they would with people who are like you, I do know. But the point is, everybody I kind of felt like that were felt as if they're family, they're brothers and sisters, and that this is a family, that everybody loves each other.
Oh, it is.
Because the way you guys encourage each other to saying, hey, you should try this or that, giving other ideas. And
well, what? I think what makes this a worldwide international family, the Magic Family, is because we're all part of something that is so quirky and odd. Mm-hmm. I think we're just a few levels up above guys and gals that collect stamps. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very, very special group. And when you love something like magic tricks as much as we do, which probably isn't very healthy, then you have to hang out with people that think like you do. And I think that's what we all do. But the real answer is that we still are thinking with the mind of a 6 or a 7 year old or a 10 year old whenever we saw our very first magic trick.
Yeah.
And that's what brings us back more and more to try and spread that, you know, interaction with other people.
So very well said. Ed, thanks very much. I appreciate it. We're going to go hear something else going on then right now. I believe that, Randy Pitchford's going to be talking about somebody, Okito, I believe, or something, I believe.
All right.
He's got a topic, and then we're going to be having a little conversation from Gabe Fajuri about Potter and Potter, and then he's going to actually have auction off some things, so you can kind of see what an auction is going
to
be like.
All right. Well, I'd like to meet him, because I'm sure at some point in my life, I will need to contact him and get rid of things that I am no longer using.
Well, it better be cool stuff, because he's very selective.
Oh, I know.
Cool stuff he's got.
I got some of the coolest stuff and stories to go with it.
Well, I know you got great
Unbelievable.
Stories.
Unbelievable.
I would recommend people to go back and listen also to some of the things you and I talked about on that episode.
That was a good
show. Down there in the library.
You know what?
My
I have
favorites.
To say, of all your shows, that's my favorite.
If your favorite, would you really? I mean, is that your honest opinion? You'd recommend the Magic Word Podcast?
I'm only saying that because it's me, because I'm on it. They're all my favorite. I love all of them. There's some kind of information and knowledge to learn on every one of those podcasts, and it really gives us a more personal look at some of these magicians, whether we like them or not. At least we get to, you give them a platform to speak on.
Sure.
Which is okay, you know, because some of them are very short and they need to step up a little.
Step up and start to look you in the eye.
Exactly.
That's true.
All right.
Well, this is Bill Wells. No, I'm sorry. This is Scott Wells.
I did that. That was on our very first interview. I did that. You know, Bill Wells was a magic enthusiast and president of many organizations that I grew up with. And it was after having a few drinks at the Magic Castle, I slipped up. And
that was so funny.
You'll never let me let that down.
No, I won't.
Only through the power of
editing
does no one else know that story.
Only right now, because I edited. If you go back and listen, you'll never hear that. But it was smooth transition. And you went right on. I'm not even going to tell what happened. You have to go back and listen.
I fixed it. Good to see
Magic
you again,
Bill.
The Magic
Word Podcast. That was Ed Alonso. Scotty out. We just finished the final session for this afternoon and for the third day, and they're now getting ready to put in the tables and for the banquet. And we've finished not only the talks, but also Gabe Fiore did an auction from Potter & Potter from the stage, which was pretty fast-paced and brought some pretty high prices. But I got a couple of people with me now who were one was attending the convention, and the other one who has been a presenter in the past, and then someone else who was actually presenting this year. So, first of all, Lance Burton, good for having
hey,
you.
Hey, Scott, good to see you. And John Cox gave us a great talk on Houdini on ships, because we're on a ship, the Queen Mary, and he went through the whole history of Houdini, Atlantic crossings, and all the seasickness
And that was story. What I found interesting, by the way, John, is that he was the king of seasick. What was the quote he said?
He was the, I win all medals for all seasickness on both, something like
all
that.
Ships.
I win all the medals. Yes, he suffered from seasickness his entire life until his last voyage, and he made that one without getting sick.
You think it was something he just got used to, or maybe it was a more stable ship?
No, it was the Imperator. So that was anything but stable. No, I think maybe he finally got used to it. Unfortunately, that was it.
Well, it was a very interesting talk, you know, that you had given us. It was interesting also, we were talking about Cleveland, that you like to give so many, up to 5 stars, if he has actually been to some place and if he'd performed there and et cetera, et cetera. And Cleveland got 5 stars, but Long Beach got...
Long Beach got 0 stars.
Yet never been to
travel in any direction and you'll hit a Houdini city.
He even lived here in LA for a while.
While he was making movies, he stayed for an extended period of time. But yeah, he never made it to Long Beach, or maybe I just haven't found it yet. When I do, I will apologize to all the citizens of Long Beach, but no record. San Pedro, right up the road.
So if anybody would have found that, I would have thought you would have by now.
Yeah, not yet.
Especially since you've been doing a little bit of research into that then.
Oh, yeah,
well.
Yeah.
So what have you enjoyed then, Lance, as far as the convention goes? I mean, each year you've been coming, and I know that you're getting more and more into collectibles and things. So
I love this convention because you learn something at every presentation, because guys like John do all this research, and then they get up and share it with the Magic community.
Sure.
So you're always learning something new, and it's just always fascinating, and I like coming and not knowing what we're going to see, because it's always something surprising.
It's kind of like, you know, Stan puts together Magic Live. It used to be based upon the magazine, which you don't know what's going to be happening. That's why I never told who was going to be coming. So each time that you would come each day, it would be something new and different, like turning the page of the magazine. Likewise here, although they announce what's going to be, who's going to be talking and everything, it's still, we don't know exactly what you're going to be saying.
But this afternoon, we had a great little session with the Long Beach Mist.
Oh my gosh, the stories they told.
And it was fantastic because I was there at Abbott's in 1977 when they performed at Abbott's, and they had a big impact on all of us teenagers at the time.
Well, and you had pointed out Kevin James.
And Kevin, it was so amazing to see these kids doing these professional acts. Kevin James was, I think, 14 at the time, and he wanted to join the Long Beach Mystics.
So he
up and moved from Michigan out to California so he could join the Long Beach Mystic.
And be part of the group. He knew exactly how important that was, and that had meant so much. And I found also about, or I thought about how much they think of each other as a family. It's not necessarily something that they kind of help each other out, like in clubs that we see each other each month, but this would seem to be a lot different. And the camaraderie they had is different than any club I've seen, which was something you said about Houdini, I think, when he'd come out. Was that you that said that, or somebody, I think, the other day about Houdini had come out and was noticing? Well, this was David Charvet's lecture about when he was visiting with the local assembly about how strong and tight of a community that they had, that he was encouraging other assemblies to be as good as what this one was out here.
Yeah, yeah. He when he was out here in 1919, he performed and hung with the SAM assembly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you find anything, by the way, Lance, to add to your collection, or did you bring some stuff to get rid of?
I'm trying to get rid of things. I'm not trying to get more. I have too many things already.
You got enough stuff. So, yeah, that I was going to say, I would think that you have a lot of stuff. Well, you got barns full of things eventually you're going to get rid of, I guess.
I got my hands full just organizing my own props and illusions and scenery. And I've just been spending the last couple of years getting that all sorted and put in the warehouse. And so we know where everything's at.
Well, eventually, perhaps at one of these conventions, we'll see a Lance Burton table of stuff that you'll be getting rid of.
Yeah, when I'm dead, then it'll go to the four winds, I'm sure.
How you feeling?
You doing okay? Yeah, I don't feel too good.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
Might be sooner than you
Elvis
think.
Elvis is dead, and I'm not feeling too good myself, yeah.
Congratulations to you for your AMA award upcoming.
I am so excited about that. That's pinnacle of my career, yeah. And it's because of the listeners who tune in, but also I have to thank all the people who have been on over the years, who I've spoken with and who have taken their time, like you, like Lance, and actually Well, it just means a lot to take in your time and to lend your voices for art, as it turns out, to be archival purposes. I really hadn't thought about, you know, how it's actually contributing to history, but I guess eventually it will, you know. So talk about once you're gone.
So maybe your recording device here will be on auction here in a couple of years.
That's right. Think of the DNA of everybody's been spitting into this, you know, over the years. That's true. Well, thank you very much, John. I appreciate that. And so, yeah, that's going to be upcoming next Friday. So hanging around for that. Are you going to be, you're not going to the banquet or the
I'm not going to
service.
The banquet, no, but I'll be in town.
You'll be in town because I'll see you next week while I'm kind of hanging out. I got nothing to do for a while. And so we'll get together and you are going
to
be.
I got to go back to the farm. Those cows aren't going to milk themselves.
Now, I know that you, Lance Burton and friends are going to be doing some things, including coming up to Magic Texas. You're going to be coming to Arlington.
Yeah, we're doing the night before show.
Correct.
For the TAOM-SAM, Combined Convention.
And FISM, yeah.
So that, yeah, and FISM. So that's going to be, we're looking forward to that. That's in, I think, September.
September the 2nd-ish.
So yeah. Sounds like, mm-hmm. That sounds correct.
And that's going to be just an awesome time. That's not something that's going to be part of your registration, but it was something that is going to be an extra event that we're going to be going to the night before.
The registrants can buy tickets and the public can buy tickets to it also.
Right.
So we're doing that. And then we've got to leave to do a couple of shows, but I'll be back at the convention for the last day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm doing something the last day of the convention.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a great convention. I encourage everyone to go to magictexas.com and you can find out more information about that. I mean, I'm involved in that. That's why I'm promoting that then as well. It's going to be a great convention. And the talent that Mike Miller has put together is just outstanding. He's so excited about it as well. And he's also receiving a special fellowship because of what all he has contributed as far as booking talent for all the different conventions over the decades that he's been working as well. So anyhow, thank you guys very much for contributing. Today, thanks a lot for attending, and also thanks for your words and friendship. Appreciate it. John?
Thanks, Scott.
Lance?
Thanks, Scott.
This is Scotty out. We just finished our dinner banquet, and they're going to be starting soon with the evening show, which is going to be featuring, which is the last thing of the evening or of the convention, which is going to be then the Long Beach Mystics that are going to be coming. Start to say Long Island, thinking Long Island tea. I'm going to the castle next week, and it's one of my favorite drinks next to the NPH. Anyhow, I'm thinking of Magic Castle because I'm here right now with Magic Castle royalty and magic royalty of someone I've admired for years, and that's Diana Zimmerman. Hi there, Diana.
Hi. How are you? Well, it's an honor to be here with you because it's a mutual. Admiration, I assure you.
Mercy. Thank you. Making me blush. I have admired you for years. We were just talking a little bit earlier about that. And you've been working with the juniors at the castle, which I think is amazing. And you've been doing that for decades now. And you have seen so many young magicians grow up to be professional full-time magicians and in other professions as well. But that it means a lot because of what you are giving them as far as that confidence that they're learning, you know.
Well, it's incredible to see the growth in the kids. I started the program. It took me 4 years to get it started because the board didn't want to know. But finally, with the help of Cary Grant, the actor, it's harder to say no to Cary Grant than it is Diana Zimmerman. I mean, how do you say no to Cary? Yeah. So he helped me get the program started. That was in 1975. We're coming up on our 50th anniversary. It's incredible. And we've graduated, over 3,000 kids for the program. But the thing that's the most rewarding is to see the growth in these kids. They come in shy.
And how old are they beginning? They can come in at
13. And then when they turn 20, they're automatically made members of the castle at 21. And it is tough to get in. They have to be very good. We take about one in every 7 or 8 kids get in on their first audition. Okay. Of course, they can come back and audition again, you know.
Are many of these kids members of other clubs or rings or assemblies or something? Or
a lot of them are. And there are some other, you know, teenage magic clubs. When the Mystics was going strong.
We don't have the Mystics anymore.
No, we don't. And that was the best junior program in the world. But when the Mystics was going, we actually started the program. There was an overlap. And of course, all the Mystic kids joined. So we had Mike Weber, we had, you know, Mark Kalin, we had, all the Mystics also joined the junior program. Mm-hmm. So we've just graduated, you know, some of the most amazing kids, but not just in magic. We have kids that have become extraordinary doctors. We have kids that have become extraordinary teachers, you know. The growth in kids. Marvin Roy used to say, "You'll never meet a bad kid in magic."
Wow, that's really I've never thought about that because of what they teach you. It's like the Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
They said, we can't guarantee that they're going to be perfect, but we can guarantee that they're going to be good.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think what magic does is a discipline, you mm-hmm. know, and I think the kids that get into magic, certainly myself, I got into magic when I was 8 years old. I was incredibly shy. Yeah, eight mm-hmm. years old. I was incredibly shy. I was incredibly poor. I didn't know we were homeless. I just thought we were camping out.
That's funny.
You know, but you see the growth in these kids. And when we had the first auditions. Glenn Falkenstein was on the panel. So was Jerry Blount. So was Nick Lewin, was one of our original sponsors. Mm-hmm. And when you see these kids come in, we had 100 kids audition. They were all boys. We took 50 of them. You know, Dirk Arthur was one of our original members. We have two board members.
And Dirk was
now,
one of the Long Beach Mystics also.
Yeah, he was, yeah. And we have two board members now that are former junior members. Mm-hmm. Rick Gerber was our very first junior yeah. member.
Right.
And of course, Ed Alonzo, who's just such a rock star,
yeah.
you know. But we have kids that are doctors. We have kids, I mean, in every profession. And you see them come in shy and sort of nerdy. And you watch the growth, the confidence. Magic does that. It teaches mm-hmm. kids to think, I can.
Did you feel that way whenever that you came out of your shell? Because Ooh. You were so shy, you found magic's like, hey, I have confidence now. Did you feel like you could be more of an extrovert?
Oh, 100%. Mm. I mean, I was so shy, I wouldn't talk to anybody. But doing magic, and then I won my first trophy at 13, you know.
Wow.
I started getting this confidence and started growing, you know. Like my ex-husband, Dick Zimmerman, said, now you can't shut her up.
Now, I remember one of the things that Marvin Roy was always fond of saying is you have to have a theme. And of course, you had this great theme about having that.
The record act.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so did you know Marvin? And I mean,
very well, you know, in fact.
I mean, I know you knew him, yeah. but I meant, did he influence you in that direction?
Well, I was very lucky because I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, and there was a teenage magic club there, the Rabbit Center Hat Magic Club.
What was the guy's name who ran the magic shop there? And Bert Easley. That's the guy. Yes. I love Bert.
Yeah. Bert Easley. I was 8 years old. Yep. And my friend and I wanted to have a carnival. We wanted to have a magician. And I went around, collected Coke bottles, and got 47 cents. I found a penny. And my dad took me down to Bert Easley's magic shop.
Yeah.
And Bert was sitting there, and he was producing coins out of the air. And I went, wow, any profession that can make money easy.
That's what Oscar Munoz
what
said,
I
too.
Do.
I got, yeah.
You know,
see somebody doing a miser's dream saying, hey, if I can make money out of thin air.
Oh, my God, it's Diana the Enchantress. Can I get your autograph?
Of course. No charge. But it was just extraordinary. And I just loved it. And to be the member of the Rabbit Center Hat Magic Club, which was a teenage magic club, you had to be 13. Of course, I was only 8, but I wouldn't go away. So finally, they let me join.
Right.
But that's the reason we have I fought for 4 years to get this program going. And then I fought and fought because there were times when the board didn't want the program to continue.
Why?
Well, sometimes they're stodgy old magicians.
Okay, I understand. And politics involved.
And yep. everything, yeah.
yeah.
But Cary Grant was always our champion. He always championed it.
Yeah. So, yeah. If you have somebody like that in your corner, how can they say no?
How can they say no?
And he was on the board of directors, I guess?
He was on the board of directors. Yeah. And he saw my very first show. Bill and Milt booked me at the castle when I was 19. I think I'm the youngest woman to ever work there. Mm-hmm. And Cary was, it was in the old Palace of Mystery, 20 seats, very small room. Mm-hmm. I walk out, this little girl from the wrong side of the tracks from South Phoenix. I walk out on that stage, and who's sitting in the front row? Cary Grant.
Cary Grant. But did you have confidence, or did it scare you?
A little of both.
Okay.
I was bound to determine that I wasn't going to let Cary Grant down.
Yeah. Of course not.
Yeah.
Of course not. Yeah. And so you continue then with the program, and other people are working on this then right now. Is that right?
Oh, my gosh.
So.
We have the best sponsors now. Both of them are former juniors, Steve Barnes and David Doyle, and both of them are former junior award winners. And a few years ago, Bob Dorian passed away. He took over for me for a while. I ran it for a long time, and then Bob took over because I got so busy with my business and everything. But I still go to the meetings. I'm still very involved.
Right.
And then when Bob passed away, Steve and David took over, and they have done, my little baby with this program is just, I can't believe what they've done with it. We now have international membership.
You do? So, is that because of after Zoom? COVID during Zoom?
Yeah, during Zoom, the technology. And so what happened was that they spread it out all over the world. We have kids in South Africa now. We have kids in Japan. We have kids all over the country now that can join, and they watch it by Zoom. And this year, for the very first time, we're going to bring two of our foreign non-resident members in to perform on our Future Stars show. I mean,
how cool is that?
It makes me cry. I'm so happy, you know. I can imagine being a kid in South Africa and getting to come to the Magic Castle. It was my dream.
I mean, it's an international dream, and the fact that you're bringing these kids in, that is amazing.
It's the greatest gift that anybody can have is to help someone else and to see these kids grow. I mean, to me, that's what this world should be.
Well, just like we were talking before offline about rescue animals, that you take care of those who need care.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, you see these kids. We have a young girl now, Isha. And she barely made it into the program, and she was so shy, she wouldn't even get up and be an assistant for somebody. And now she has so blossomed, she's auditioning to work the castle.
Yeah.
It is so exciting to me to see these kids.
Now, when is the thing going to be coming up in the future, or the kids going to be?
We have a meeting coming up, this coming on the 18th of March. We have a meeting, and we have our meetings are on the last Saturday of every month. And then once a year, we have Future Stars, where all the kids, the best of the best, take over the whole castle. They perform in
close
all
up,
the shows.
Power, everything. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, can you imagine? I mean, you know, I just keep thinking of little Diana Schultz was my maiden name. Little Diana Schultz coming to the Magic Castle.
You never thought about that. As you said, when you were homeless and you were kind of shy. And,
you know, and I would sell grapefruit door to door to get money to buy my magic tricks.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, now let's talk about the convention here just a moment. What have you enjoyed? This has been just a great thing that Bill has put together.
Bill Smith is a genius. This is the best. I mean, I met people like you that I haven't seen in years, you know, and you meet people that you haven't seen in years. But the greatest thing about it is you learn about the history. I mean, you're learning so much about the history, like that incredible presentation that the Long Beach Mystics did. I mean, that was phenomenal.
Right.
Or, you know, the lecture about magic in California.
Yeah, David Charvet did a great job about it.
David Charvet is incredible.
Yeah. So maybe the Jack Goldfinger just might book him to do a lecture for the castle, I think, you know, and talking about the history of magic in the golden age of Southern California.
It is so exciting because by studying our history, we really learn about who we are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it is just have an amazing group that you have been working with for all these years. And this is an amazing group of magicians who have convened here on the Queen Mary. What a great venue this has been then also. It's just so super. And right now we've got like a swing jazz orchestra that's playing for us while we're having dinner. We're just taking a little break here for a minute while we talk outside of that. But it's just been an amazing week the last few days, and that it's gone by so quickly.
And you get to see people like you. And like I said earlier, you see people that you just don't see, you know, at normal magic conventions, and not a single card trick in sight.
That's true. Well, Diana, it's a pleasure. I can't tell you how much of a pleasure it is to get to see you again. As I said to you, and I'll say this publicly then also, it's just great to see you because, I mean, it looks like you haven't changed at all since I saw you on Mumbo Jumbo, It's Magic. And that must have been back in the 70s or 80s, I guess.
1980.
Yeah.
1980.
That was phenomenal. You're still looking marvelous. And I appreciate everything that you're doing to raise the next generation of magicians and working with them as well.
Isn't that what it's about?
It is all about that. Absolutely. And it's passing it on, isn't it?
Yeah. And we've got people like Jonathan Todd, you know, who has the Magic Lounge in Hawaii. And he is taking kids in as apprentices. Can you imagine? You get a trip to Hawaii, you get paid, and you're learning from somebody who runs a business with magic. I mean, there are so many people that are giving back, you know.
Right.
It's just incredible.
There are a few people who are out there, and I think that you are encouraging other people to emulate what you're doing and these kinds of programs and things, and I hope that they do to make this even.
I'll leave you with one last thing. This is the one thing that I try to teach the kids. Magic is your foundation, not your ceiling.
Ooh,
whatever your dream is, make it your foundation, not your ceiling. This is what I teach all my kids, you know, all the juniors. Whatever your dream is, whether it's magic or anything, make that your foundation. There's no stopping you when you believe in magic. Magic teaches you that you can do it, you know. That's why you never meet a bad kid in magic.
I think you and I need to sit down and do a full episode sometime, talk for an hour. I mean, there's so much, it sounds like, we could talk about over there.
We will.
This was great. Diana, thank you very much for your time. So for the Magic Word Podcast, thank you. That was Diana Zimmerman. This is Scotty L. there are so many luminaries here and so many historians, people who know so much about what's been going on. And this is a great, Mark Holstein just said, this is a great place for a magic history conference because there's so much history here on the Queen Mary. Well, one of the people I was just talking with is my guest right now, Mike Michaels. Hey there, Mike.
Howdy, it's me, Mike Michaels. I live in Las Vegas, and I'm crazy for magic.
Well, you can stop right after you're crazy, probably, yeah. About right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we were just talking a moment ago, because I had Lance Burton on a little bit earlier on the episode, and you were saying that about how, that of course, you're known for this robotic act you do, and you were inspired by him.
Yeah, so 1982, if you remember Lance on The Tonight Show. So I'm watching him. I'm a hillbilly kid living up in the mountains of Colorado. And watching this, I think on a black and white TV. Well, Lance was so robotic. If you watch that video, he almost didn't look where he struck the matches and how he lit the candles, and he wasn't looking what he's doing. That's where it snatched into my head. Hey, if I was like a robot Lance, let's say a robot typical magician, who would pull the flower out of the sleeve, produce the cards, but right now add in images of me acting like a robot doing this here at the table. All right. And we're back. So that's where I got the idea. Now I started to add more I call it robotic reinforcements. Open my face, take my teeth out. My head spins in the air. And as those progressed and came into the act, I started to drop things like the cards or the robot dove or some of the simpler stuff. I kind of evolved into a novelty act, so I could work in every country because I didn't speak.
No speaking, right.
No, 1,500 cartoon sound effects, 7.5 minutes without speaking, and I was able to get it on and off the plane before 9/11. After that, I had to go air cargo, and it was kind of a pain in the butt. I did end up building kind of the world's most ultimate specialty act where my body blows up to an animatronic duplicate of myself, but it's about 900 pounds worth of equipment.
Wow.
For 7 minutes. Kids, I don't suggest that.
But was it worth your time?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't actually even remember how I built it. There's so much wiring up inside there that if I had to do the act again. So I'm pretty much retired from performing, and now I'm building stuff.
I know you are. And every time at Magic Live, yours is the one booth that seems like that attracts all attention because you're in the middle with a helicopter and all that cool stuff.
Yeah, I enjoy it. You know, what's keeping me from wanting to perform or needing to be on stage is the fact that what I can create, I get to see the other magicians perform.
Right.
But I'm not the guy that's going to build the sub trunk for you. I kind of want to create my own product line that are my ideas. That's what's keeping me going. So I have a good relationship with Bill Smith and admire him. And when people want stuff that they want a certain way, and if it's not in my head, I just will refer them somewhere else because I want to put 100% into what I'm building.
Do you have an engineering background or electronics, or how do you know all this?
Bottom line is there's something inside me that allows me to be able to create this stuff. No, I got a high school education. I is no dummy. And early on, my parents would drive down from the mountains in the Colorado, and my father at the time had a CB radio, so he'd go to Radio Shack. But he'd be there like 3 hours because they want to put, you know, an antenna on the top of a trailer. We were upper middle class. We had a double wide. So I literally programmed everything in Radio Shack in my head. Like, what is that? That's an LED. Now, you can't just hook that to a battery because there's something in there that allowed me to build this stuff in my head.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Kerry Pollack about his wireless wizardry.
Absolutely. Kerry's a genius, yes.
Yeah. Well, listen, I appreciate it. We're getting ready to start the show here momentarily. Mike, always a good chance to see you. You're going to be, again, a dealer, I guess, this year at Magic?
Yeah, I might have a couple knee surgeries, but I'll be there with something, I'm sure.
Is that from jumping in and out of sub trunks or what?
Not me. No, I don't know what I'm doing.
As far as your knee surgery.
Yeah, look, I got to have a car on display and part of my new robot Tyrannosaurus Rex escape. So hopefully you'll see something that's kind of unique.
Very cool. Looking forward to it. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks.
For the Magic Word Podcast. That was Mike Michaels. Scotty out. So So we just finished the evening show, and it was with the Long Beach Mystics, and I've got somebody here with me who was not a Long Beach Mystic, but you have seen him perhaps on television for the years and years and years, starting out he was a little child, and now he's a big child. Here he is, Greg Wilson. Hello, Greg. How are you, man?
Howdy. Good to see you, Scott.
Good to see you, my friend, as well. So this was a good convention. Wouldn't you say? It was just awesome.
Just wonderful. Yeah. Yes.
Now, this is kind of in your own backyard here in Long Beach, because you live in L.A., right?
Or that's right. Yeah.
So you're not very far away over from this. So.
Well, we a couple hours. Yeah.
That's right. So how's your mom? How's Nonnie Darnell doing?
Oh, thank you for asking. She's doing great. Yeah. She just had her 93rd birthday.
93rd. As I recall on Facebook, you had some sort of party for her, too. Isn't that
she
right?
got to have three parties.
Three parties. Okay,
yeah. We had a family one on her birthday, and then the next one Erica threw for her at the castle.
Nice.
And then I had another one at our office that was open for everybody to come.
Yep, that's so nice. So nice. Now, as far as this convention goes, have you been to many of these collectors before? Or
this is my very first. It was very lucky.
Yeah, it was nice. It was kind of, as I said, in your own backyard over here. Next year it's going to be in Las Vegas. You thinking about signing up maybe for that one?
Oh, definitely.
You know, it's one of these kind of conventions. Once you've been to one, it's like, I don't want to miss another one. They're so much fun. And this is, I think, my fourth one as well. It's kind of like, I've got to come to all these.
Hey, old friends and new friends.
That's right. And the fact when you say old friends, that's very true, because this is about old magic in a way. You know, it's classic magic, and there's a lot of people who are older. You know, this is, there are not a lot of young people here, but there are some, obviously, who are getting involved with collecting and with history, and interested in history. And this is the place to come, I think, and if you want to hear about the history of magic. And that's something you've been preserving for a long time with the Magic Land of Alakazam. Tell me what's the latest, by the way, on what you've been doing with doing all the archives.
Well, I'm still working on the archives. It was wonderful at Penn & Teller to help feature Mom and Dad's history on the episode that aired right around Christmas time with the train illusion Penn presented. Yeah. And I just acquired magicauction.com.
Oh, you did? Okay.
So we're giving new life to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was kind of defunct for a while. I don't think anybody was doing anything with that.
Oh, no, it was still alive and still going well. But Joe and Chris Trippi decided it was time to retire.
That's what it was,
yes, and they put it up for auction, and I bid it against everybody, and I won.
So what do you plan on doing with that?
We've already started the new site. It's not open yet to the public, but it will be the same magicauction.com, the same basic setup. Everything's pretty much the same, except it has new features like online bidding. So your bidding will be instant. A wanted section. So if you're looking for something and it's not listed, you can put it in the one ads.
That's great.
And somebody suggested, how about a shipping section? So people can comment about what shipping they had that was good, who was bad, and other wonderful new features.
I like that idea about something that you're wanting. I've always thought a great idea, they got eBay, in which you're looking to sell things. There should be something that's called eSay. You want to say something that this is something I'm looking for that I want to buy. You know, somebody should open, which of course is easy. So eSay, I just think it's a clever idea. And so I'm glad that you're doing that.
And we're also including forums that would be interactive. Mm-hmm. And the first forum that we're going to feature is my experiences with Joe and Chris. So it's the Trippi Forum.
The Trippi Forum.
Yes.
I like that. That's pretty funny. Now, in this convention, what have you seen that has been memorable to you? As you said, this was your first one and you're going to be coming back then again. So what is it that wanted to make you come back? What did you see or hear or meet?
Oh, just hearing about the history is amazing. Things I didn't know about.
Yeah.
And also seeing the performances.
Oh, they were awesome.
Yeah. Especially watching the Okito presentation that
Randy Pitchford did
today. Yeah.
That was something I think that was very interesting then as well, in which he had some original Okito pieces and he was performing those then as well. So
yes.
And then John Cox was talking about Harry Houdini on the high seas, particularly.
That was funny. recounting all his trips back and forth across the Atlantic.
Yes. Which apparently that he is not didn't have very good sea legs, I guess, so to speak.
Right, yes.
He got sick all the time.
Seasick became a thing for him.
That's right. When you were cruise ships, did you ever have any problems with seasickness?
No. My problem was communicating because I was doing it before the internet.
I guess that's right. Yeah.
So now it's much easier.
Yeah. You know, I remember years ago in which their magicians would go to sea and it was kind of like they wouldn't be seen after that because they couldn't keep in contact with their clients.
Right. It was hard to get the next booking.
That's right. So it's kind of like they couldn't get in touch with you because you were out to sea and they couldn't reach you. And then if you could get a good internet connection now and again, it was pretty few and far apart.
That's exactly right. Yes. Yeah. So that's why now I'm focusing on the magicauction.com.
I see. Okay. Yeah. And as I said, I remember that you were trying to raise some money for a while to try to get your videotapes transferred. Has that happened? Are you still working on that? What's the status on that?
Since we spoke, I was able to get a huge collection of Mom and Dad's original broadcasts that had never been seen since they were shot back in 1957, 58.
Okay.
And we got all of those saved, which is wonderful. The next phase is the original Masters of the Magic Line of Alcatraz. I'm sorry, Magic Circus episodes that I have all the source reels. They're called ISOs of each camera.
Yeah.
And so now it's gotten more expensive. Mm-hmm. It's almost $500 an hour. And I have about 19 hours. So that's quite a fundraising effort.
It really is. That's not something that's going to be... You can just kind of pull out of your back pocket, say, yeah, no problem. Here you go. I mean, $500 per hour. Yeah, 19 hours ago. Yeah, it's quite a bit.
And the reason to do it is because the machines that play back the 2-inch videotape are going away.
And there's only one person in the world.
In L.A., and there may be some others around in other parts, but he's the main guy. Yeah. He does all the...
Got the equipment.
Right. He has every type of analog recording machine. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's awful good to see you. I'm glad to hear that your mom's doing well and everything else is going great. And you got the magicauction.com. It's going to be up and running and everything.
And there's only one thing mom wants to do.
What she
wants
to do?
She wants to go to the Dallas convention.
This is going to be an awesome this year coming to Magic, Texas. It's going to be in Dallas and it's going to be great because she was from Dallas. Is that right?
Yes. She met dad in Dallas back in 53, New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. And that she considers that her home base.
So this would be a great place, or another good reason, I think, in order to come to Magic, Texas, in order to meet Nonnie Darnell and Greg Wilson.
One of the things I know they're going to feature her with is the Texas, not Texas Association of Magicians, but the Dallas Magicians Club.
Yes.
That's celebrating their 100th year.
That's right. That's why that it's... This is Assembly 13 in the Dallas Magic Club that's sponsoring this. And in fact, we have another podcast. It's called 13 Minutes to Magic Texas, in which every 2 weeks we talk with about different aspects of the convention. And I'm hosting this when we talk with the president, the co-sponsors, actually, this Dal Sanders, who is the president, along with Mark Whitehouse from the SAM, who are the co-chairman, basically, of this, and then talk with other people who are committee chairman and dealers and everything else that's going to be happening. It's going to be awesome. We got a brand new hotel that just opened up in February that is the Lowe's Hotel, and it's right across the street from the Rangers Stadium, the world champion Texas Rangers, by the way.
Wonderful.
So it's going to be just really great, and I'm looking forward to seeing you there then, Greg. So,
and a very interesting thing, Mom and Dad's wedding anniversary is on the 29th of August.
No way.
And the convention starts on the 1st of September.
1st September, that's
so,
right.
So my goal is to get back to Dallas before the convention and go to the SMU church on the university where they got married.
Because your dad was a cheerleader there.
He was. He was a fraternity president and cheerleader.
I remember when I was the president of the TAOM back in 2000, and I had him come out, and I took him around all these different places, and he was promoting the TAOM, and we talked to different television stations, and we were in a van right there in SMU, and he was telling all those stories to me about what all they used to do there. It was kind of cool.
Oh, I missed that one.
That was just a lot of fun back then. So I'm looking forward to this one, and it should be a really good convention. And I believe that Gay Blackstone actually is going to be the guest of honor there as well. And since you're going to be coming in early, you get a chance to see Lance Burton and friends. He's going to be doing a show there the night before.
Oh, great. Wonderful. I didn't know.
Thursday night. So that's going to be a special extra event then, too. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, and hopefully you can interview mom.
Well, I really would like to do that.
The lovely Nonnie Darnell.
I really want to do that. Well, while we're here, by the way, that this has been a great convention, I'm going to start to wrap this up with you because we have been speaking with so many different people the last few days, and this kind of is a good place to wrap it. And one of the things, by the way, for those of you who are listening, you know, we've been running a contest for the last couple of weeks, and that is for an opportunity to win a copy, or rather, Psy Rollers. It's a trick that's by Michael Breger, and I have drawn the names, and drum roll, please. There we go. Thank you. The winners are Gary Weimer and David Thornburg. congratulations, guys. You are the winners, and I'm going to contact Michael Brager. He'll be getting in touch with you and send those tricks out to you. So be sure to subscribe to the Magic Word Podcast. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us and all the rest of that good stuff as well. And I have had just such a wonderful time, as you can tell here from the Magic Collectors, Texas Magic. This has been the Magic Magic Collectors Expo. That's the X, not Texas, but Expo. This has been really great. Next year, we'll be in Las Vegas, and we're going to have an opportunity then to go to David Copperfield's museum, which you're a part of. I believe you got a few things that are with the Magic Land of Alakazam that's there. And you have been to the museum. It's pretty cool, isn't it?
It sure is. It's beautiful. Amazing.
And so if you register for next year's convention, you'll get a chance then to do that as well. But it's going to be a while before that Bill Smith puts this up for registration. Greg, always good talking with you, my friend. I just think you're doing great work in keeping magic alive with you and your family. So congratulations.
Thank you, Scott. It's great to talk with you. Good to see you.
Good seeing you as well. So I think that's a wrap, actually, from Long Beach. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Greg Wilson. And this is Scotty out.
Happy magic.